Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Hungry Authors podcast. Today, I am so excited to tell you that we have Morgan Strelo here with us. She is a literary agent at The Bindery, and she has a super cool background. So we are excited to talk to her about all things writing and agenting and pitching and all things books. So welcome, Morgan, to the Hungry Authors podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I've listened to every episode. Love your show. Love what y'all are doing for writers who are wanting to publish books.
Aw, thank you. That means a lot to us. Well, why don't you start by giving us a little bit of a rundown on your background? Because I know even before you started writing, you were in like sports and stuff. So tell us how you got here.
Yeah. So my path to publishing is an unorthodox one. I spent the first 10 years of my professional career working in the sports industry. And the quick version, if I can give a quick version of 15 years of work experience, I always wanted to go into publishing from the time I was a high school yearbook editor, traveling to New York to receive prestigious awards from the Columbia Scholastic Press Association. I was a yearbook nerd. And I'd remember like walking by the Random House building and like looking up and like just picturing myself like walking into the office. And that's what I wanted to do. That's what I went to college to go do. But this was around, 2007, 2008. The Kindle had just come out. The iPhone had just come out. No one really knew the future of print media and print publishing. And anytime I would tell an adult that I wanted to work in publishing, they'd be like, maybe don't put all your eggs in that basket. And, maybe you should think a little bit bigger. And so I thought a little bit bigger and was like, okay, I'll aspire to do something in the entertainment industry. And I still wanted to go into publishing, but I was open-minded. And then fast forward a couple years, I had two summer internship opportunities. One was to work at a publishing house in Nashville, and one was to work for the Super Bowl 45 host committee in Dallas, and both unpaid. And ultimately, it came down to a logistics thing where I had a place to stay in Dallas. We had friends and family there. I didn't have a place to stay in Nashville. And so I went with the Super Bowl internship. And that being a first internship, before my junior year of college, just opened up more doors to more internships in sports. And I was on my way to a great career in the sports industry and just kept walking through those open doors. Back in 2019, I decided to leave a toxic work environment and just kind of parachuted out of that career, and had the opportunity to start fresh. And I had done a lot of communication strategy, executive writing for athletic directors and executives in the sports world. And so I started freelance writing, like freelance executive writing, which is basically ghostwriting for executives. And that led to, referrals to people outside of my network. Those referrals led to more writing opportunities. And then people started asking me, hey, would you help me with this book proposal? And I was like, of course. I fell in love with writing book proposals. And so, I did a lot of copywriting in my freelance writing days, and think like book proposals is like the great, a great example of it's a marketing document. If you've ever I worked on bids for national championship games back when I worked in college football. And I mean, it is a pretty much like a 400-page proposal for a game. But so I loved the idea behind your writing. There's this strategy and there's positioning and there's research and ultimately you're crafting the messaging to appeal to the reader to want to learn more about your book and to hopefully want to sign you or buy your book. And so the marketing hat I put on to help craft these proposals was a lot of fun for me. I never stopped being a student of publishing, even when I worked in sports. And so I had enough savviness to at least start and continue learning as I go. And so that's how I became like a go-to book proposal writer and collaborator. And then I became an agent.
That is so cool. I mean, I love hearing people's paths to publishing. And like you, I mean, I graduated college a couple years after the iPhone came out and everything. But I remember hearing a lot of the same things too when I started, which was like, oh, publishing, huh? Like, good luck with that. That's not going to last very long. But here we are all these years later. Publishing is going strong, having some of the best sales, years in history, and that's incredible. But I also think it's just really interesting to hear about, the doors that open in our lives and how that kind of how we kind of land. But you ended up in the right place after all, and not that sports was in any ways the wrong place. It sounds like that was a really wonderful way to prepare you for this position in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it really is one of the things that's so unique to agenting, as opposed to like book coaching, which is I ended up doing more book coaching when it came to the proposal writings because you do more than just write a proposal. Because not everyone wanted me to write the proposal. They wanted me to kind of coach them through the writing of the proposal. But one of the unique things to agenting is that it's really thrilling in the high highs and the low lows and the competitiveness that is involved. And I think my background in sports and as an athlete, I was a college tennis player and I love the competitiveness and the thrill of pitching and waiting, for those for that interest and then negotiating for better offers. And it's terrifying and thrilling and at the same time. And it's so fun. And not everyone's cut out for it. But it feels like, I mean, it feels like a sport. And so I think that I cut my teeth in those high stakes competitive environments and in the sports industry prior to coming to agenting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did you do any like manuscript writing, or have you done it, or any interest in that?
Yeah, so I've done some manuscript writing, both fiction and nonfiction.
Oh, cool.
And so I'm finishing up a fiction project right now that I've been working on for the past year. That was just really fun, and it's made me want to do my own fiction project now. But I love the confidence that it's given me to dabble in that for myself. But I've done a lot of editing in fiction, but this one is more collaborative in the sense that like the bones were there, but it needed a it was like a heavy developmental edit where like maybe whole chapters just needed to be rewritten. And so kind of a hybrid between like a ghostwriting and also a heavy developmental edit.
Yeah. Tell me about, like, I obviously you got into agenting, but how did that actually happen? Like, did you just and you've known obviously what the job of an agent was when you were writing book proposals and working with clients, but when did you say, "Hey, like I want to be an agent," or how did you reach out to, it's like one of those sort of non-traditional jobs, like a ghostwriter too, where like
you don't just necessarily go to agent school, or, you know, you kind of have to know somebody or get some practice somewhere. Like, tell us a little bit about how the switch to agenting actually happened.
Yeah. So I was not looking to become an agent. I was very content book coaching and was growing my business and had a great referral network and was not looking to agent. I didn't even think I could agent. You know, if you look at the backgrounds of a lot of agents, they were at publishing houses before they became an agent. They were probably an editor at a publishing house before they became an agent. I knew I didn't have that pedigree, and I didn't live in New York City, and, you know, wasn't planning to relocate to become an editor at a publishing house. And I've also learned that, like, the sports world is, like, totally opposite, like, as far as the people. And so I don't even know if I could have even gotten a job at a publishing house. And so I wasn't looking to be an agent because I didn't think I could. So the next best option for me was to be a book coach. Even though I thought, like, agenting would be fun, I think I'd make a great agent. All that to say is I saw the posting for the bindery, within 10 minutes of it going out and, like, the publisher's lunch email. And several of the authors I had worked with are represented by the bindery. I had talked to an agent at the bindery when I was thinking about writing a book. I knew enough to know that if there was an agency, to agent with, or to, like, ask about agenting with, like, that would be one that I would want to work with. And so I, like, cleared my day and was like, I'm going to write an email to Alexander Field, who founded this agency, and I'm going to send him my resume. And I did that, and that, you know, launched a series of conversations that led to him offering me the job, which in my mind is wild. I learned that there were 600 applicants for this job. And which is wild for any job these days.
What did you say in that email?
I mean, I wrote the email like I would write pitch copy, right, to an editor.
Totally. That's awesome. Yeah.
And, you know, some of the executive writing I had done was writing for executive search firm positions. Like, I had written cover letters and letters of interest for, like, high level executives. So that's something that, like, I can write a good cover letter, which means I can write a good pitch letter.
Right.
And so that just led to a series of conversations, and they ended up hiring two new agents. So I was one of two that they hired. And one was an editor at a publishing house. And so they took a risk on me, and, you know, it feels accidental. It feels like lightning in a bottle. Like, who can plan that? But what I can tell you is they recognized my name enough to, like, want to open my email. Like, I had networked well. I had worked with a lot of types of authors and authors that they had worked with. And so they were at least familiar with me and my name. And so they paid attention to my email. And I think that networking and visibility and being in and around the types of people you hope will want to work with you is important for anyone, no matter, like, what you're trying to do professionally or creatively. You need just to put yourself in those spaces, in those rooms, in those virtual rooms, virtual communities that. You know, we recognize names when they come in our inbox, and we get lots of emails, and we don't read them in order. Like, we pick and choose. And so.
Yes, totally. I love hearing your story, because you are very much like a hungry agent, I would say. Probably, I don't know. I'm sure in some ways you're a hungry author too. But, you know, we talk a lot about, like, hungry editors, hungry agents are looking for hungry authors, right? So
Yes.
tell us a little bit more about what you look for in your potential clients, especially because you have this unique background. You yourself are an incredible writer. How does that kind of play into what you look for and kind of your expectations for your own authors?
Yeah, so related to being a hungry agent, I think being a new agent makes me the most hungry because I'm actively building a list. I don't have an established roster of clients. There's agents on my team with, anywhere from 50 to 80 clients. I don't yet have 20. I'm still growing and building my list, and so I'm actively looking at queries. I'm actively looking. And so what I look for as a hungry agent, is I look for projects I think I can sell. Part of my job is getting to know editors and getting to know what editors are looking for. And so we're constantly hearing, send me this, like I'm looking for this, or like, don't send me this. Like, I don't want to see another this in 2024. Just like, please don't send, so we're like, we have detailed spreadsheets, like who's looking for what. And so we're looking for what we can sell. And I'm always doing mental calculations on how ready is this project to pitch to publishers? How much time do I think it's going to require to get it ready to pitch to publishers? Which editors and publishers do I think would be interested in seeing this? Is it two or is it 20? Because that'll make a difference on whether I want to take this on. What's the minimum I think I can sell this project for based on the interested publishers, based on the estimate of time I think I'm gonna need to spend on it, and the amount I think it could sell for? Like, what would be in it for me, like from a from a really practical financial standpoint? And then if it doesn't sell, because no project is guaranteed to sell, like would it still be worth taking on? So those are like the questions I'm running through. I know that not every project is a guaranteed sell, and so I have to, connect with maybe the missional or the message in a meaningful way that, I get some kind of like altruistic, like feel good for working on this project, even if we're not able to find a publisher. Again, I don't take on projects I don't think I can sell. But even then, reality is not every project sells, or it might take years to sell. So I have to think, if I'm trying to pitch this for years and I don't see a dime of that until we actually do sell it, like, am I going to still be really like passionate and enthusiastic about advocating for this author and this project down the road, even if, I've spent X number of hours on it? So I have to ask myself all these questions. And so all that to say, like, I look for pol like good projects that there's somewhere in the market for it. I look for good writing that, if it's not a commercial driven project, like, I know editors who are looking for just like that good, that delicious writing that is so rare. And like, not all of my projects can be like super literary, but I want a few because I still want to be able to advocate for that kind of like delicious writing. But not all of my projects can be super literary because super literary projects don't sell for much. And so I do need some commercial and some market driven. And so it's also like looking at my list and being like, I've got a lot of small platformed authors right now. So I need to be looking for some bigger platforms. Or I've got a lot of literary authors need to, so it's kind of like finding that balance of being able to maybe risk my time and my energy on something that's like maybe not as a slam dunk as, this project that of course is gonna sell. So it's really like a balance of all those things,
Totally.
which you can't really, as an author, you can't like force. But I say that to say that every agent is doing this. And sometimes when you pitch one, it's not about like, it's not personal. It's not about your project. It's just about timing or fit, or it just doesn't make sense for like their network and what they're looking for. And so many times it's not personal. And I know it's easy to think that, but that's kind of how we think about our lists.
Yeah, that's, I love what you said. That's exactly where my brain was going too, is like so many authors don't realize all of the factors that you are taking into consideration. And same thing when I was an acquisitions editor, I was looking at, you know, the context of my list and all of the things. And like you said, trying to find a balance of like, I've got too much of this, so I need some more of that. I've got, you know, this budget that I'm trying to work in. And so I already gave away this much of my budget. I need to give away some, you know, less or whatever it is. There are so many things that have absolutely nothing to do with the quality of the project or, you know, the platform of the author or anything else that factors into our decisions. And helping authors understand that, you know, it's one of the things we get to do on this podcast. So I really appreciate you kind of taking us behind the scenes there. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'll say the very first writer that I reached out to whenever I accepted my agenting job as someone who at the time had less than 500 followers on Instagram. But she was such a gorgeous writer, and I knew she had been working on something. And so I asked her if she was represented yet. I asked her to pitch me. I signed her, and like she was hungry. She like we worked out a strategy like before we pitched, like, why don't you work on this for your platform? She had already. So talking about platform, if we can pivot there, and I'm learning this from client to client, different ways to position unique platforms. So like not everyone's platform is going to be social media, right? This one client, she had, you know, over 50 bylines, and they were at, you know, HuffPost, New York Times, like some smaller magazines as well, but she had a nice like network of editors that she had published multiple times with. And so in the platform section of her proposal, like we're really highlighting like what we're having to like paint this picture of like, this is the platform is like bylines in these, on these websites and in these magazines that get X number of eyeballs, that connections with these editors, that, you know. And so that's, you know, something I'm looking for that can be more in your control and an author's control than a follow count. Like bylines really, really highlight that. If your follow count isn't necessarily a strength, then say like, but I've been featured here, 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 and here. Similarly, another client who doesn't have like a huge online platform, he speaks several times a month on different stages. And I had him list out like in the past year, like everywhere you've spoken, estimate about how many people that were at those events. And we really like emphasized like how many people he's in front of on a stage, like physically on a stage. And so instead of leaning on, you know, a few thousand followers here and a few thousand followers there, it's like he's in front of tens of thousands of people who might walk up to a table and buy a book after an event. And so I'm looking at those things too. It's not just a number on an account. It's really like a whole package of, you know, who are you in front of? Who's paying attention to you? Who's listening to you? Who could you sell a book to?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've actually heard from other agents that things like speaking and network can, I mean, this is all, I don't think anyone has like super great hard data on this, but they have said that anecdotally anyway, they believe that those can often be an even better predictor, more reliable metric of book sales, especially in the long run. And that, you know, obviously social numbers are great if you have them, but there's been tons of instances where, you know, people with hundreds of thousands of Instagram followers, like it really hasn't turned into book sales, you know, and they'd much rather have somebody who's got a pretty steady speaking circuit, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And so, and those two projects I sold, and, and those were two of my first sales in this past year. And so,
congratulations.
And I had another first author that I signed had over, you know, 250,000 followers on social media. We didn't sell in round one. We had to go to round two because, you know, like also platform size is so contextual. We would hear from big five publishers that, like, you know, that's a small platform, like small platform, that's a small platform. And also this person's like heavily credentialed, excellent writer. Like she is like the full package. But one of the things about going out round one is that it was timing. We would hear from editors, oh, we just published something similar. Oh, we just signed something like too similar. And so it was just a timing thing. We went out round two, got a preempt, got multiple offers, went to auction. And so it was all about timing in that instance. And so it was, publishing is so wild and unpredictable. And so much of it is about timing and context. And
so you mentioned a few terms that I'd love for you to explain to listeners. Tell it, what does round one, round two mean? Let's start there.
Yeah. So going out on submission to editors with an agent would probably look similar to how you might query agents. So hopefully you don't just like spray and pray all your queries at once. Hopefully you just send out, you know, a group at a time, wait for some feedback, hopefully, and tweak if necessary, and then send out, you know, to more after you've made some adjustments based on feedback. That's similar to how we go out to publishers. And it depends on the project, but usually, you know, I take my projects out to about a third of my group of editors that I've compiled, and most of them would be top choices, but I might throw in, you know, just, you know, a few others to get the, you know, just get feedback from maybe a non big five editor in that first round. And then if the first round doesn't result in an offer, you take it out again. You might make some changes and adjustments if you get some consistent feedback. You might not. And you kind of take it out in groups. And so I usually do like a round one, round two, and maybe a round three. But I haven't had to go to a round three yet. So,
okay. And how much time, like how much time are you spending in round one, like waiting for responses before you decide to send out round two?
Yeah, it's different for every project and also depends on where you're at in the calendar. So typically, you know, publishers go pretty quiet in the summer and also in the month of December. And so depending on where you're at in the calendar, it could take, you know, 6 weeks just for rounds. I mean, I probably wait about 6 weeks before going out with a nonfiction project. For a fiction project, I'll wait closer to 3 months because it does take editors a lot longer to get to a manuscript and to give feedback on that manuscript. And also in fiction, there might be more substantial changes from round to round based on that feedback. And so if you're hearing from multiple editors that, you know, I'm just not connecting with the POV character, the point of view character, have they considered writing it in a different POV. Like, that's an example of what kind of feedback, if we hear that from several editors, we might go back to the manuscript and be like, help me understand why it's in this. And we determine, do we need to make a change so editors can connect better with the narrator? Do we need to write in third person before we take it out again? And so fiction is more of a long game and takes a lot longer. For nonfiction, if it's a project that I expect a lot of interest in, I might put a deadline on it, that I'd probably put 4 to 6 weeks out. But that deadline, the idea is to create some urgency. And but I also don't know how I feel about the deadline. I've experimented with it. And I think it works better in the Christian publishing realm than it does in trade publishing. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Oh my gosh, so interesting. So talk to us a little bit about, I mean, this is vague and it's your industry, so obviously you hopefully love most things about it, but we would love to know just some of your general feelings on publishing these days. And yeah, what are you liking about it? What do you wish were different? You know, Ariel and I do a decent amount in traditional publishing, whether it be ghostwriting or working on book proposals. We also do some hybrid stuff, and it makes complete sense that in traditional publishing, you know, this is a business. So like you have to be pretty dang sure that your book is going to make money for other people. And that means matching market needs and studying data and information, sometimes compromising a little bit on exactly what your sweet little writerly client would like it to be, because, you know, anyway. So how do you feel about how do you just feel about that? The market and publishing and sort of balancing all these different opinions and incentives, and when at heart, like a lot of us really just love writing and love books and, you know, wish it wasn't so complicated.
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting time to be a writer right now because there are so many different publishing paths that are more accessible than ever. And but you know, before I was agenting, I was editing for a hybrid publisher. So I was looking at a lot of hybrid manuscripts, polishing them up for publication. And I mean, that was a great path for those books that, you know, probably would have had a hard time getting traditionally published because, you know, they weren't so distinguishable like in the market, and you know, they didn't have huge platforms. And so, but these authors were still able to publish their book, and they have a book now, and they got to do it more on their timeline than on a 18 to 24 month plus timeline that traditional publishing often takes. And I love that is an option for the writers who don't want to go the traditional route, or like their heart's not set on it, or they just keep, you know, experiencing barriers to traditional publishing. I also love that self-publishing is an option. I actually several some of my favorite audiobooks, I didn't realize at the time that I got hooked like to this one author that I listened to like all of her books. I realized like all of these are self-published and I enjoy listening to them. And that's really helped me, like just as a reader, appreciate that there's so much more like diversity of stories and voices and everything because the gates have come down for a lot of writers. That said, like I know it takes like some privilege and financial privilege and just access to the knowledge on how to self-publish and hybrid publish to do those things. So I want to be sure to acknowledge that, but it is more accessible than ever. For those who are able to go that route. As an agent in traditional publishing, I don't feel guilty for passing on projects because I know that if like I'm not a gatekeeper. Like, I might be a gatekeeper to traditional publishers, but even if I take on your project, that doesn't guarantee a sell to traditional publishers. And if I take on
Yes.
something I don't think I can sell to a publisher, we might waste 2 years of your time that you could have gone to a hybrid publisher or KDP Publishing, and you could have been making 2 years worth of sells on that book. And like I would be doing a disservice to that writer if I took on a project I didn't think I could sell to a traditional publisher. And so having that mindset, like I don't like, it's hard to turn, like there's some projects that I really want to take on, but I just like the calculations, just the math's not mathing, as they say. And I don't want to I don't want to be the barrier to that author getting published. And I
Yes.
can if I try to take on things that I have no business taking on. And so I have to remember that I'm not the gatekeeper. I'm a door to a path, but it's not the path. And even if you walk through the door, that doesn't mean that the next door is going to open. So.
That's such a good perspective. I love that so much. And I thought about it kind of similarly when I was an acquisitions editor. And it was interesting because there were times, and I don't know if you ever find yourself doing this, but there were times when I had to justify like the benefits of traditional publishing to a potential author, especially because in education, which was kind of the area of publishing that I was in, there was a lot of hybrid and self-publishing, opportunities as well. And so I remember one particular conversation with a very, very well-known author, potential author that I was courting and trying to win over and sign for our company. And he was like, "Look, I mean, this hybrid publisher is offering me 60% royalties. I'm having a hard time understanding why I would publish with your company." And I was like, "Yeah, man, like that's a good question."
Yeah.
I mean, it's really true. And and that was a good inflection moment for me to be like, why are we doing this? Like, what is the benefit? And I have my own answers to that now, but and I've thought about it a lot over the previous years, but I don't know, do you ever find yourself kind of in that position?
Yeah, I have. I went to a conference back in the fall and just, and it wasn't a writing conference, but I found myself sitting behind someone I had been following on Substack that I like had in a outreach spreadsheet, someone I wanted to reach out to see like if they were interested in talking about book ideas. And when someone introduced me to her, I was like, I follow you on Substack. I love your writing. I'm an agent. Like, I'd love to like go get a drink with you afterwards. Like, and so after talking to her, I realized like she had her heart set on self-publishing. And like there was a point in the conversation where I was like, I need to respect this and not like try to talk her out of it. Because there's also, she was a woman of color who had like a reason to distrust like some traditional publishing dynamics. And there was a point where I just needed to like respect her decision and her path and also support her in that and be like, I can't wait to read that this when it comes out. And also if you ever for future projects want to talk about, and there's been a few conversations where a author comes to me maybe after having a conversation with a hybrid publisher, and after that call, like I get the sense of like I would be doing them a disservice by taking them on, because like that's a good opportunity for them, and they're ready to do it. They're ready to sign the papers. And if I take on this pro, like I said, like it could be 2 years. And so yeah, I have to also listen to the author and understand, and kind of like put on that coaching hat. Like, yes, I'm a salesperson. Like, I sell books as an agent. I sell myself as an agent to authors, but I am also like, I what's best for an author, even if that's not partnering with me. And so that's something that I have to keep in mind. Like, I work for authors, and I want to partner with authors who want to work with me on this path. And so I have to assess, just make sure that that's right for the both of us. And so.
Yeah, I love that. It feels like you don't want to have to really talk anybody into something. You like want them to want to and you to want to. I mean, hopefully, agenting or the agent author relationship is a long one, And I resonated a lot with something you said earlier about how obviously you look for projects you can sell, but also that there is just a personal benefit to you in some way. And as a ghostwriter, I've come to view my work in that way too, which again is sort of a privileged position. But because you're entering into something that, sure, it will be financially lucrative, but it will also be time consuming and stressful. And, no matter how amazing it turns out, at some point there will be strife and there will probably be conflicts and bumps to overcome. And so partnering with a person that I just genuinely like on a book or a subject that I genuinely care about has become equally as important to me as just the money or the clout that would come of it because of the way that it affects my quality of life and the kind of contribution I want to make to the world, And so like it's so hard. It can be hard to get first-time authors to understand this, me included. When Ariel and I were pitching our book like over a year ago, we had that sort of like we were trying to hide it, but we've certainly experienced that desperate like anybody, just anybody say yes, that every new author feels. But if you can zoom out a little bit from that and find, your inner strength and confidence and self-worth as a writer, you really are looking for a partner, not just anyone who wants you to pick you, but somebody who feels like you do, who cares about the project and you and your career and everything long term, and that will help it to go the distance. And by the way, I don't know if you feel this when you write, this is a little bit like woo, but I actually do feel like when I write book proposals and send those emails, there is that energy comes out in the writing, that sort of pick me desperation that people don't, it's kind of a turn off. Like people don't want to feel that. Even if you're feeling it deep inside, you gotta cover it up, anyway, yeah. Do you feel that or
Oh
experience?
yes.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
A lot of the I guess mythology behind like the curtain of agenting is like we experience rejection a lot. Like not only do we experience like every single rejection our authors are experiencing from publishers, we also get like passed over by authors we want to work with. We make offers of representation to an author like we get really excited about and are like we really want to work with this author. And then as soon as we make the offer of representation, they go notify other, agents who then a few others will probably make an offer. Maybe not, but if there's someone one agent really wants to work with, chances are another agent may want to work with them as well. And that's just the like part of the job. And on one hand, it's I'm trying to figure out the balance of like getting like so attached to potential projects to because then maybe it won't feel as personal when they don't choose me. But it's like I love that feeling. I love that high of like finding a project or a writer that like I really want to work with this person and that's part of the fun. And then when they do choose to be represented by you, even better. And so like the highs are high and the lows are low and the lows are hard. But this job, whether you're a writer or an agent, the same thing with editors. Like when multiple offers are made, an editor's really wanting to work with someone, but the author gets to choose one editor and one publisher. Like rejection is part of this, tenacity is part of this. It's hard, but I think it sharpens so much of like the work we do and what we're putting out in the world. It thickens our skin. Like I want my writers to stay, stay soft, but I also want them to be able to take feedback and take passes and grow and learn from them. And so I share almost word for word all the feedback I get on projects because, I want my authors to be able to take it and learn and pivot and build that resilience because there's a lot of that in this in the pu in publishing and in writing and it hurts, but it can be a gift if we let
I think that's maybe some of your sports background coming out too.
it.
Like, no pain, no gain, people.
I was talking to a fiction author earlier this week that I'm hoping to represent, and it turns out she was a competitive tennis player too. And I'm like, in a sport like tennis, like even Serena Williams, like if you look at how many matches she lost a lot. She like I don't know what her like winning percentage was, but most players like lose more than they win. But like we still choose to like step back on the court. We still choose to like keep playing and suit up and go practice and get better. And I think you got to have a little bit of that determination and work ethic to not let the hard feedback, the creative losses, the creative injuries, put you back because those injuries can heal if we let them, if we you can grieve and you can, take time to do that, but don't stay down. Like, yeah.
Well, that is so well said and feels like a great note to end on. So, if an author listening to this wants to work with you and pitch you their incredible cover letter, query letter, where should they do that? And just where do you want to connect with listeners?
Yeah, so if you go to the bindery agency.com, you'll find in the I think it's the About tab, you'll find my information, what I'm looking for. Also you can connect with me on all the socials. I'm at Morgan Strelo, and I'm also on Substack at morganstrelo.substack.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. This has been an amazing conversation. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.